You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Hey, Money Magic, it's a new book out that may make you think twice about the conventional thinking that we've really heard about for decades when it comes to financial advice. And that includes areas like home ownership, life insurance, cashing out your IRA to pay off your mortgage, and why you might want your daughter or son to grow up to be plumbers rather than head to a pricey private college. Something to think about. For your own son. I've heard about some of this before. Plumber owned so much real estate and retired really early.
Yeah, well, I just paid a lot of money to get a drain cleared, so I'm rethinking my profession as well. Lawrence Kotlikoff is professor of economics at Boston University. Larry joins us on the phone from Boston. Larry, how are you?
Great. Thanks for having me, guys.
So what is the biggest thing that we're getting wrong when it comes to conventional wisdom when thinking about retirement?
Well, there's so many things we're getting wrong. We're not saving enough. We're retiring too early. We're taking Social Security too early. We think we should get out of the stock market in old age when economics actually says you should, as you're going through retirement, you should be putting a larger and larger share of your dwindling retirement fungible assets into stocks.
Tim and I were just talking about this. Remember when it used to be like your age minus, and that would figure out how much should be in fixed income versus the equity markets? Continue.
That's another one of the rules of dumb of the conventional financial planning. But we also need to understand that we should be timing the market for risk. When things are riskier like they are right now, we don't know whether the economy is going to be able to absorb all the illness from Omicron, even though any one person may not be as likely to die, that's more risk. So we should be cutting back on our stock holdings in times of risk.
So
that's actually what we see happening.
Yep. And we do, right? We've seen a fair amount of money pulled out in a big way. Certainly when we talk about the trillion-dollar route that we've seen in a lot of those technology names just in this first week of 2022. When you sat down to write this book, why did you want to do it specifically? Because you talk about when it comes to living standards and these financial decisions that we can make can really impact our living standards going forward.
Yeah, Wall Street is focused on our wealth, and economists are focused on our welfare. Our welfare connects to what we get to spend and our living standard. And economists have been working on personal finance for 100 years, starting with the work of Irving Fisher in the 1920s, the Yale professor. So I got into grad school in economics because I wanted to help. I thought it could be a field that could help society. And I realized, working a lot on personal financial issues, that what was being conveyed to the public as advice was complete right angles, completely at odds with what economics was recommending on every area, whether how much to save, when to retire, when to take Social Security, how to think about your longevity risk. Just completely across the board, it was all oriented towards product sales when it came from conventional planning, economics. And then you had economists basically never talking to the public because they didn't have a clear idea of what precisely to say, and they didn't think it was their job to actually prescribe solutions. But I've been working in developing personal financial software. We have a tool called Maxify.com, M-A-X-I-F-Y.com, that I've been working on for 30 years developing the software, which does deliver the economics of the solution. Most people don't want to run software. So I said, let me take everything I've learned over the years from economists, from the software, from my own research, put it into this book, and that's where I'm coming from to help people.
So I'm just at Max. I'm looking at the planner right now. It's really interesting, Larry. I'm wondering, how people can put your lessons into practice. I mean, what's a practical way to think about the advice that you've learned over your career?
Well, I mean, the book. If they bought the book, if they don't want to actually, run the software, they buy the book. The lessons from the software are primarily, mostly in the book. What we're trying to figure out in economics is how to have a smooth living standard, how to raise your living standard safely, like doing smart things with respect to Social Security and retirement accounts to lower your lifetime taxes, how to price decisions. If I'm thinking about buying a new boat, how much is that going to cost me? A big boat. Not a new boat, but a big boat.
Yeah.
How much is that really going to cost me in terms of my ongoing living standards? So I need to understand that trade-off in order to decide whether it's worth it to me. So pricing risk, but also when it comes to investment, understanding the range of my living standard outcomes. Wall Street is focused on your saving, what you're currently saving, you're spending mm-hmm. some targeted amount that has no connection to what you actually can afford, and then accumulating this stuff up on a Monte Carlo simulation, simulating whether or not you run out of money. But economics says you're going to adjust your spending all the time.
Right.
And so therefore, we have to look at the trajectory of your living standard path.
Larry, we've just got about a minute and a half, and then we'll come back and continue with you. But you go through so many conventional, you know, so much conventional wisdom when it comes to financial planning. Give us one thing that you think might just shock people that they're told to do but we shouldn't be doing, or that they should do that we shouldn't be doing.
Well, like cash out your IRA that might be in the stock market right now and use it to pay off your student loans, your credit card bills, or your debts, or your mortgage. That's unusual advice, but that can make a middle-class household $100,000 in lifetime present value increased spending. There's just one chakra after the next in this book, because so much of conventional wisdom is so far from appropriate.
But if you cashed out your IRA, you'd face penalties, right? You'd face stiff penalties, not just in taxes, but in...
So there's an issue. Yeah, it's not for everybody, and I talked about that, but if you're in a... Maybe you've been furloughed, maybe you're over 59, so there's no penalty. You are going to have to pay taxes on it. But the advantage of once you risk adjust the stock market return, it's just the bond market return. And therefore, there's a clear arbitrage opportunity. You said that the long-term treasury was like 1.7%, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
Well, if the mortgage rate is 3.5%, there's a differential there you can pick up with no problem. So when you risk adjust the stock market, it's really 1.7% you're earning in the market. So that's why we need to do an apples to apples comparison when we're thinking about these kinds of things.
Larry, I'm going to toss it over to Tim, because we've been having a conversation about what you just said for some of our audience. And let's remind everybody what we asked about.
So we'll remind you, Carol asked you about something that was provocative that's in the book, and you certainly delivered. And you talked about cashing out your IRA to pay off a mortgage. And I guess I'm having trouble making the math work, because if I'm understanding the logic here, you're, you know, taking money from... your IRA, you're taking it out of the stock market or asset allocation that includes stocks and fixed income, and you're putting it into a different asset that you're paying off a small portion of each and every month at an interest rate that is really, really low by historical standards. Yeah. I don't understand.
It's really, really high. It's really, really high compared to the safe rate of return that you can earn in the market right now, which you said just on the show is 1.7%, I guess on 10-year or 30-year, I forget what you said, 30-year bonds. So if you got a 30-year mortgage and you're comparing that, you know, maybe borrowed at 3.5% versus you can invest at 1.7%, there's an arbitrage opportunity here. So why am I focused on the 1.7? Because you can risk it. You have to risk adjust the stock market return. The stock market historically has yielded about, you know, 8 or so percent above inflation. That's a long way away from what you can earn on. But that's just an average. There's a huge standard deviation in the stock market, huge fluctuations. So people are saying this thing is too. If it was perfectly safe to be in the stock market, nobody would be investing in the bond market at this ridiculously low rate. Mm-hmm. So that's why you need mm-hmm. to risk adjust, so we can do apples to apples.
So tell us about some of the other thinkings that you get into your book, and you talk about specifically, you know, you get into Social Security. You talk about, you know, something that Tim and I have talked a lot about. I just sent a daughter off to college. And, you know, higher education, especially from private institutions, it's really expensive. You're talking $70,000, $80,000 a year.
Yeah, yeah. And I say, you know, I have a chapter entitled Don't Borrow for College. There's a chapter on, you know, Marry for Money. There's a chapter title about divorce, like, and basically, you know, how to divorce without going to divorce war. So the book really covers the entire gamut of personal financial decisions. As for college, you know, there's evidence that going to Harvard relative to some other university is not going to matter much to your career earnings, because it's how well you work and how diligently and how creative you are. I mean, Harvard collects really, you know, special people who are very good at working, very hard, and also are talented in other ways, but it doesn't necessarily add any value to them. So why should you pay for, $70,000 a year when you can, have the same career if you go to Wake Forest at a much lower price? I'm not sure Wake Forest is cheaper, actually, so I'm just throwing that example out. But that's the idea. Let's shop around for a school that's affordable. 40% of the kids that go to college never finish. So if you borrow for the luxury of dropping out of college, this is crazy. Who borrows money to invest in something where they know right at the get-go there's a 40% chance of getting nothing?
Hmm. Yeah, that's it. No,
so that's why there's a chapter called Don't Borrow for College. It's very strong, strong language warning people off from this.
One thing that I've been thinking a lot about is what the present environment means for people who are early in their careers right now, people in their 20s and 30s, because we have seen really historically high returns in the S&P 500 in the last 3 years, and how people should be thinking about retirement. So what advice would you have for people who are in the earlier part of their careers? Maybe they don't own homes yet. Maybe they are still at the beginning of saving for retirement and planning their financial futures. What should they be doing that conventional wisdom says they shouldn't be doing?
Okay, so the stock market has done fantastically of late, but it's also done fantastically poorly over the, in the Great Depression went down 86%, went down 50% or more in the Great Depression and the Great Recession. It's had bad times. And so I would say, look, if you're starting out, make sure you put enough into your 401k to get the employer's match. That's free money. After that, pay off any student loans, any credit card. Don't carry around large credit card bills. And then buy a house with as much cash as possible, because, engage in safety first behavior. And then beyond that, invest in the stock market in a diversified way, as well as other things like REITs and bonds. I'd be very careful about inflation. I think this government is so broke beyond belief that we're going to have inflation out the wazoo through time to pay off the government's, the government is going to print money to cover its spending, because this is what governments that are broke do. And our country is as broke as any country in the world that's developed. We're not Zimbabwe or Venezuela at this point, but we're in very bad long-term shape, fiscally speaking.
I'm so interested in your book. One of the other things you find out, and here's a line, everyone, that will make you probably want to just read the whole book. You can't count on dying on time. Longevity is likely your greatest financial risk. I mean, we really need to think about this, Larry. I have a brother who was like, how do I know enough is enough? Like, when do I know enough is enough? Because he had an advisor who said, you're good. But it's tough.
Yeah, it is tough. Let me just give you, it's one of the things I talk about in my book is my buying an annuity for my mom when she was 88. So my mom was, my brother and sister, my brother's, my sister ran a bunch of major companies, and my brother's the provost at Cornell. Both of them thought buying an annuity for my mom at 88 was crazy. Right. I went to the principal life insurance company. They said they've never sold an annuity to anybody that's old. So I got an inflation indexed annuity for her, and they said she's not going to make it beyond 4 years. And she did. She made it to 98, and it was great that she made it, and it was great that we had the annuity to help with that.
Well, we could talk, and forgive me, we're running out of time, and I wish, hopefully you can come back at another time, because I think this is really provocative.
Anytime.
Larry, good luck with the books. Larry Kotlikoff, he's professor of economics at Boston University. His new book is Money Magic.